So, you don't have Frank today. It's going to be a little more subdued, I guess.
We'll be a little less Frank today.
Yes. Yeah, a lot less Frank. You guys are going to have to make do with a substitute.
Right.
Who'd you get?
We got Josh Olive is our special guest today, and then RJ obviously taking care of all the controls and his knowledge, and then you got me, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. So... You know, today we're going to do things just a little differently. You know, we're going to kind of stay somewhat focused on, you know, a lot of people are talking about the tarpon that are out there right now.
What's a tarpon?
It's a big silver fish that people just love to catch.
Any good to eat?
No.
Then why do people catch it?
Because it's fun.
All right, now we've got the most important questions out of the way. We can talk about these things.
Right. So what we're going to do is basically go down the line of how to start off your day with tarpon fishing, you know, because it does require quite a bit of effort to go out and do this, whether you're doing it by yourself or going out with friends. But it all starts at the house. You know, for me personally, when I'm doing it, what I do is I get my rod set up, and at the same time I'm usually making a couple of phone calls to find out maybe where the fish have been, or I've gotten some feedback from customers at the shop, you know. And then also Frank on his website has a tarpon page on there at fishandfranks.com, and you go to the tarpon page, it's updated too, so it's got a lot of different dots on it to tell you where the fish are at. But the main thing is right off the bat while you're at the house is just making sure all of my knots are tied right, so I'm not having to mess with it out on the water and getting my poles buttoned up, checking my drag, the whole nine yards.
Well, here's the thing about tarpon, and a lot of people who are still trying to have their first success with these fish need to understand and learn this better. Everything here is about preparation. Preparation long before you get out there on the water. Understanding what tackle do I need to have to successfully take these fish on. What rigs do I need to use? What else do I need to understand about these fish? Because they're very frustrating. When you get out there among these fish, you're going to think, okay, there they are right there. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to catch one of these things. And you're going to get there, and then they're just not going to play, you know? So you're going to take shots that are going to miss many times, probably, unless you just are one of those beginners.
Super lucky, lucky person.
Sure, people strangle them all.
Yeah.
That have that, but most of us don't have that. Most of us are going to take many shots before we successfully even connect with one. And then, once you successfully connect with one, if you haven't done all of the background work, all of the homework, all the understanding about how to deal with these fish, then you're going to fail because you didn't tie a strong enough knot, or you didn't understand that you need a strong enough leader, or you didn't realize that, hey, when we tell you that you need heavy tackle for these fish, we weren't kidding. You need heavy tackle for these fish to take them on. So if you want to be successful, the preparation, the groundwork is really key to it.
Absolutely. You know, so, you know, going into that, you know, it's one of the few fish where you can't really go into it cheaply. You know, because the average fight for a tarpon is 30 to 45 minutes. That's a normal, average fight. For some people who really know what they're doing or just dumb luck, get them in quicker than that. But an average fight is 30 to 45 minutes. So you need a reel that's got very strong gears, very strong, smooth drag, a rod that's capable of handling it, the line that's capable of handling it, and, of course, the hook is the ultimate end part that has to hold it besides your knots.
Right.
But and you put such a great deal of strain on your terminal tackle that the reel and the rod are definitely the most important, critical part of the whole thing.
And people try to find a place where they can cut corners in that. And with most fish, there is a place that you can cut corners. You know, if we're going to go and we're going to fish for, you know, bonefish, for example. Bonefish have strong, fast runs. You need to make sure that you focus really well on that reel so that you have a good, solid drag system. But you can do it a little bit cheaper on the rod. if you want to, because they're not going to put the rod to too much test. In most places, you can find some place you can cut a corner. With tarpon, you cannot. They are going to test every bit of that equipment to its utmost, and if you cut a corner, that's the piece that's going to fail.
Exactly. You know, so going into rods, I mean, RJ, you know, I mean, usually when casting to these fish, we're using a little bit longer rod.
Yeah, you need to be in a 7.5 to 8 foot length if you're casting to them.
Right.
The negative is the rod needs to be a little stouter than you would normally pick for your average 7.5 to 8 foot casting rod. And if you're going to get a little fly whipper, they're going to break it on you.
Well, they're going to break it on you, or you're going to fight the fish to the point of exhausting it to death.
That's true, and that's the other side of it, too, is some people are skilled enough that they can bring a fish in on much lighter tackle, but it takes a lot longer. And it does exhaust the fish. And again, this isn't something you're going to eat. It has no value to you other than the fun of the fight. So you got to have the right tackle.
Right. So, you know, mostly inshore flats fishing, we use a lot of 7 foot rods, you know, basically bass tackle.
Right.
But for these guys, because we're making, in a lot of instances, longer casts, the longer rod is going to help you with that. That 7.5, 8 foot rod. You know, something with a faster tip on it, but definitely a whole lot of backbone to it. So, you know, one of my personal favorite rods is the Star Stellar Light in the 7 foot six. I'm a little more partial to the 15 to 25 class because it's just a little softer, but the 15 to 30 is one of our best sellers.
Yeah, and it's a good rod. It does the job. It has everything that you're really looking for in a tarpon rod. It's a great, great casting rod. The issue to me has been the strength to pull on those fish, because I understand the challenges that a tarpon faces out there in the wild. You know, you're out there dodging sharks. Those fish are here to reproduce. They need to have as much energy as possible in order to do that. They travel a huge distance to come here, and then they travel long distances again to reproduce. So a lot of energy is being expent by these fish in just their natural, everyday-to-day things. So I want to get that fish beaten as quick as I can, get it back out there in the water as quick as I can. And while I love the Star for casting, I found it a little bit lacking in the ability to pull on those fish as hard as I want to. Now, other people maybe not want to pull on them as hard as I do. But,
so what's your personal favorite rod?
So I wanted something a little bit heavier, and I found that in the locally made Reapers. They make a 20 to 50 that really lets me haul on those fish as hard as I want to. And when I test these rods, what I do is I tie a line to the wheel of my truck, and I pull on that. Pulling on an immovable object gives you a pretty good feel for how far can I test this rod. I don't recommend other people do it because you might break your rod doing it, but I do it because I want to be able to give people the best advice that I can. So if you're a hard puller, if you're going to really put the boost to these fish, that's a great choice. Now, before I found that rod, I was using the Bill Fisher 17 to 40, which allowed me to do kind of the same thing, but the Reaper lets me cast better than the Bill Fisher.
That Bill Fisher 17 to 40 is all right, but the problem with it is it's a 7 foot rod. It's also a hollow glass rod, so it's a much heavier rod, and it's got the boat rod type grip to it.
Right.
So for me personally, that rod is an awesome rod for putting in the rod holder.
Yeah.
And putting out behind the boat with a live bait on it or a dead bait, whatever, and let the rod holder do the work, you know, do the work for you, essentially. And most people will actually land more tarpon successfully by letting the rod holder do the hook set for them than having the rod in your hand and trying to do it yourself.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect rod for that scenario personally, but for, you know, a lot of instances this time of year, we've got some clear water, we've got fish that are moving around a lot of different areas. I like holding that Star rod in my hand because it's a little lighter weight overall, and for casting distance, it's a little nicer. And I don't know if you have a personal favorite, RJ, to go along with any of that that's pretty popular or not.
No, I'm not a big tarpon fisherman because I'm getting older, and I don't like getting beat up all the time. But uh, I I tend towards an 8-foot rod, and the reason I like the longer rod is it gives me more leverage on the fish. You know, the higher up you are, the greater an angle. It's all physics, and you can pull a whole lot harder with an 8-foot rod than you can with a 7-foot rod.
Yeah, so there's a reason that when we're fishing for really big game fish, we mostly use shorter sticks. A little stout stand-up tuna rod.
Yeah.
Because when you actually have a longer rod, you're giving more leverage to the fish. You're actually much better able to fight that fish with a shorter stick than you are with a longer stick. The truly ideal rod for tarpon fishing would be about 10 feet long for casting and about 4.5 feet long to fight the fish.
Exactly right.
And then would extend out to 6 feet when you needed to go around the motor.
Right.
So we have to develop some type of hydraulic rod here that we can change the length and kind of like our tower, our radio tower here, goes up and down in case of a big storm coming in.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, like that. Let's just put guides on that.
Yeah.
So we kind of established with the rods, but the reels are the other important part of it. Personally, for me, I believe is one of the first parts of it, with the rod being secondary, because that has to have strong gears, drag, everything, because that's taking so much brute force from those fish.
Yeah, the gear train has to be solid. It has to be well manufactured. And fortunately, in recent years, manufacturers have really stepped up their game on these spinning reels.
Well, they've had to because of the development of braid line.
Right.
You know, braid lines have become so popular in the community that guys are putting 50-pound test line on a reel that's made for bass fishing, which would normally hold 10 or 12-pound test mono.
And this has helped us hugely because we're now using spinning reels for all kinds of things that you never would have used spinning reels for before. Look at the rise of jig fishing for tuna and going out there and targeting amberjack with these spinning reels, you know, and the yellowtail over on the Pacific coast, which is the same fish as an amberjack, basically. You know, trevally, that they're out there fishing with spinning gear. That's all helped us in the manufacturers now have much, much tougher, much, much stronger reels that are better suited to tarpon fishing and are more likely to last for a couple of seasons versus a few years ago, you got a good reel and it might last a season if you got lucky.
If you were lucky, yeah. No matter how you take care of it, you know, so, personally, one of my ideal reels for dollar value and yet still the strength and everything else is the Penn Spinfisher,
which they've recently upgraded.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. The previous one was fine, so I don't know. I mean, they did a little bit better gearing in it, and they did, you know, they beefed it up considerably. But
well, the thing I like that they did, too, was they added the slammer or the slammer drag to it.
Yeah,
which is
drag.
Awesome. You know, that's really a key to being able to fight these fish is now you've got a drag that is not only smooth but also very, very powerful.
Yeah, so you can put a lot of strength into those fish. But the 6500 in the Spinfisher or the 6000 in the slammer, basically, you know, they're both similar in size because every reel is a little different with how they size them, different brands. So essentially what you want is a reel that is capable of handling, say, braided line is the majority of what most people use now for tarpon fishing. Not because it's necessarily better, but the pro to it is that you can put, say, 50-pound or 65-pound braid line on a smaller reel than if you were to use the traditional, say, monofilament, which would be 30-pound monofilament on a reel, so that we used to use to fight these fish with on a spinning outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we always had to carry a spare spool of line with us out there because after you catch one or two fish, your line would be so straightened out and stretched and all curling up on you. You had to strip all that line off, re-spool your reel to keep fishing the rest of the day versus braid line. You don't have to do any of that.
Yeah, and
so
they do make
some
monos now that are better suited to that type of fishing that aren't going to be stretched out as much. But even so, they're still going to be stretched. You know, there's only so much you can do with monofilament. It's a nylon string.
Right, exactly. So that's why you're seeing a lot of people going to the braided lines, you know, and going to the size-wise, you know, you've got several different brands out there that they vary significantly in size, even though they're similar line capacity.
Yeah.
You know, Daiwa is one. Shimano is one. Shimano, what's the one Shimano, RJ?
The 8,000?
The 8,000.
Yeah, the Saragossa.
Yeah, see, the Saragossa 8,000 has about the same line capacity as the Penn Spinfisher 6,500. It might have just a hair more, but not by much. But they're two completely different brands, but very similar in line capacity, so it's more or less about that. And when you're on a boat, you can still chase after the fish, but for me personally, I like to have a reel that's capable of holding in 50-pound test, or even 65-pound test for that matter, about 250 to 300 yards. And the reason why that's most comfortable to me is if I get broke off. If I have a, because a tarpon will dump 100 yards in a skinny minute. And if he turns under a boat or makes a left-hand turn around a crab trap buoy and breaks me off at 100 yards, I've still got enough line left on the reel to keep fishing for the rest of the day. Because most of us don't carry extra line anymore.
Right, and good luck finding a spare spool.
Yeah, yeah.
For anything.
Yeah. I mean, most reels don't come with spare spools anymore. You have to order them, and they're sometimes it's cheaper to buy the second reel than it is the spare spool.
I was just about to say that, yeah.
You know, so that gets a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, and don't get too hung up on the size of these reels either. You got to have one that's big enough for the line capacity. If you have one that's oversized, an 8,000 in the Pen, or even that 10,000 in the old Spinfisher, you can definitely still fish with that. It's just unwieldy and heavy. You're not going to have as much fun casting with it. The big mistake I see people making is getting a reel that is the right size, but is not strong enough and durable enough. There are a lot of manufacturers out there, and it seems like a lot of these reels, for some reason, are Daiwas. And Daiwa does make reels that are capable of handling tarpon, but they also make a bunch of large-capacity reels that, as far as I can tell, are for fighting big catfish on.
Right. And every company has that. Every company has a very large reel, you know. And some of the things I explain to customers are like, well, I'm a Shimano fan because Shimano makes the best reels, or I'm this brand because they make the best reels. And I'm like, you know, and depending on their age, obviously, understand this, is Chevy used to make a Chevette and a Corvette. All, you know, the Chevette was their very lowest end car that they made, and their Corvette was their highest end one that they made at the time.
But it didn't matter which one you had. Either way, you could ask a girl at the bar, hey, want to go for a ride in my new Vette?
Yeah, nice. So
I got to remember that one.
All
depends how drunk she is, whether she even notices the difference.
Right.
All manufacturers. All manufacturers make a very inexpensive or cheap reel and a very expensive reel. You don't always get what you pay for, but there are a lot of instances where you do. So you have to basically try to get the opinions of your local tackle shops. Go in and talk to them about what reels would be great for that situation.
And read the reviews. I mean, you can go online and pick a reel, and you can go read reviews on it. And, you know, how did it hold up, and how did it not hold up?
But yeah,
if you're going to fight tarpon, that's not a place to cut corners price-wise, quality-wise. Because
right.
You won't be happy. You won't go fishing again. And, you know, as you're driving home with this broken reel sitting on the seat next to you, and you're just not going to want to do it.
Right. You know, and I did get a little too in-depth with a lot of this stuff, so I'm kind of forgetting to give some of the different fishing reports that are going on out there that are actually happening.
Well, but that's how it is with tarpon, unfortunately.
I know, because you get super excited about them. It's something different.
Well, and there's so much to dig into with them.
Right.
You know, all these little details are super important. So it's not like where we talk about the snook and say, oh, okay, well, you need this kind of rod, this kind of reel approximately, and then we talk about places to go and things like that. We could do the whole thing for how to catch snook in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of snook.
I don't like segues. Don't segue me.
I'm gonna. You know, snook are doing pretty good out there for catch and release, guys. You know, they're in their pre-spawn pattern right now, so they're running down the east wall, the west wall. They're starting to stack up in the intercoastal. Some guys are doing actually pretty good up. They're starting to see some fish up by the Venice jetties. A few fish have already started to move out onto the beaches. So if you're really looking for them, concentrate your efforts anywhere along the intercoastal.
Now, be aware that most of the fish that are going to move out to the beaches right now are going to be the males. Smaller fish.
A lot of small fish.
We're seeing all buck snook out there on the beach. I have not talked to anybody, nor have I seen a female fish out there on the beach yet.
No.
That doesn't mean that there won't be some female fish at places closer to that where they stage up, like the jetties or the docks on the backside of some of the barrier islands. That will be where the females will be hanging out, near the passes where they can get out to the beach pretty quick, but they're not in the surf yet.
No, still not quite that time. So once you've got your rod and your reel for your tarpon, and now you've figured out the line, you know, now what do you do next with your leader?
Well, you know, the important thing here, before you can really focus on having the right leader, is having the right knots to put those things together. Because
right.
if you're putting those things together, if you're tying braid and the leader material together using a surgeon's knot,
mm-hmm.
you're probably not going to have a lot of success with these fish. You know?
Yeah.
That knot's just not going to take it. If you're
it cuts into itself.
Yeah. If you're tying a blood knot, well, with braided line, I'm not going to tie a blood knot out there, not to fish for tarpon anyway. So you need to understand which knots are going to hold up for that. And the two that I recommend to people are the FG knot and the double uni knot. And if you don't know either one of those knots, then forget that I said FG. Just forget it entirely and focus on the double uni knot, because that by far is the easier knot to tie and get correct. And the FG is very unforgiving in that if you get it just 2% wrong, it's going to fail every time.
Yeah. 2% wrong is 100% fail.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Guaranteed.
And I know this because I've had several of them fail on me, because
so
I still
have
don't have the confidence in that knot. Now, you can also use a swivel. You know, there's a lot of people that don't like to use swivels or think you can't use a swivel, but if you feel comfortable using a swivel, go right ahead. The main reason why we usually do a line-to-line knot is because we're using a 4 to 6 foot long leader. And it's hard to cast that with 4 to 6 feet hanging off of the end of your rod. Good news is we're using a 7.5 to 8 foot rod, so you can still cast it, but you're going to lose a lot of your distance out.
Now, let me just ask real quick, why would you tell people that they could use a swivel if they want to? I mean, obviously you can, but here's the thing. In order to put the swivel into place, right,
mm-hmm.
we have to tie two knots. We have to tie a knot from the braid to the swivel,
mm-hmm.
and then a knot from the leader to the swivel. If you're going to do that, and you're probably going to recommend to people that they use a uni knot, correct? You don't want people
always.
Tying a clinch knot.
No, if not with 60-pound or 80-pound leader.
And definitely not with braid.
No.
It slips in braid, and in that heavy leader, you're usually going to come back with the pigtail of failure, which demonstrates that you tied the wrong knot. So if you're already tying two uni knots, then why not just tie the two uni knots together?
Because some people don't feel comfortable with it, and then there's other people out there that would still be using mono on their reels rather than braid.
Okay, so for mono, I get it a little bit more.
I still think you should use the uni knot, period, to tie all those lines together, because it's the strongest knot that will hold out there for heavier monofilaments and or braid lines. It's just a fairly simple knot. It's basically similar to the fisherman's knot that we were all taught as kids, just a slight bit different touch to it. But
how many people have you shown how to tie a uni knot?
Today or altogether?
Altogether. Give me a guess.
I don't know, tens of thousands.
Right. And I haven't had the experience with showing people how to do it that you have, but I know I've shown several hundred.
Yeah.
And almost everybody, when you show them how to tie this knot, they say, oh, that's all there is to it?
Yeah. No, it's a super simple knot. It's
even
not like
the double uni knot.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this question. If I rigged your tarpon rod for you,
mm-hmm.
and I rigged it with a swivel between your main line and your leader,
mm-hmm.
would you fish it that way, or would you go back and tie it with a regular double uni knot?
Depends. It really does.
Okay.
I mean, I personally would always tie a line-to-line knot.
Okay.
I mean, how about you, RJ?
Same thing, line-to-line knot.
Yeah. You know, I prefer it just because I can reel it up into my rod and get my lure or bait closer to my rod tip so I can get a much better distance out of my cast and just provide a little bit more accuracy with it.
Yeah, and the other thing I tell people, and I've turned a lot of people away from swivels with just explaining this, it's another potential point of failure. If you can tie the knots will hold. The double uni knot is going to hold, no problem. So when you add that swivel in between the two knots, you've got something else that can go wrong. You've got something else that can break. If it's got a little bit of corrosion on it, it might fail because of that. If
sure.
it's a badly manufactured item, it can fail because of that.
And
why have another point that can go wrong?
Well, and there's always those possibilities, but the biggest misconception is there's so many people out there that swear that a swivel gets in the way of anything. You know, just you can't catch fish with swivels, and you shouldn't be using swivels. And there's plenty of swivels out there that still work, and people have caught many, many fish on them. So it may not be as applicable for tarpon, but it is in a lot of other species of fish that you shouldn't have to be afraid of not having to not use a swivel, basically.
Right. Now, for example, when I'm fishing for sharks, there's always a swivel in the rig.
Always.
And there have been quite a few sharks out there, too.
A lot. There's been a lot of little sharks out there. You know, the small fun-sized sharks, as we call them, you know, the 2 to 4 footers, occasionally surprised by that 5 or 6 footer. But down there off of Cape Hayes, between Cape Hayes and Boca Grande Pass, all the way up the intercoastal into Lemon Bay and even down into Pine Island Sound, I'm getting mixed reports of black nose, sharp nose, black tips. Bonnet heads seem to have disappeared a little bit, but they always kind of do this time of year. Sometimes they move out into that little deeper water, like into the center of the harbor, and other ones seem to disappear way up inside into like Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, or some of the smaller creeks, like up in Inglewood. You know, you'll have them, guys will start catching them up there, and geez, I can't even remember the name of the one creek up there in Inglewood. It's very popular.
There's several of them.
Yeah, there is. But it's just weird because a lot of these guys will never see a bonnet head in those creeks or canal systems back there except for this little period of time. And I don't know if they're hiding from the bigger sharks or not.
That would be my guess. Is as the other sharks come in, the bonnet heads are food. And so they move up and away, or they move into deeper water where they're harder to get to.
Now, the one thing that seems weird to me this year is I haven't seen or heard of any sharp-nosed sharks.
Just very few.
Lots of black noses. Some that I think might be fine-tooth sharks because they don't
look
quite seem to be black noses.
Yeah, they're super close.
But yeah, where'd the sharp nose go?
I don't know. I've only heard of a few, but they could show up at any given moment.
Or they could have moved back offshore where they were supposed to be in the first place.
Exactly. That's their normal habitat.
Fish are weird, man.
Yes, they are. So now we have kind of the leader and the knot established. You know, a lot of times we're using 60 or 80 pound fluorocarbon is fairly essential this time of year for your tarpon fishing because they have a giant eyeball, so their vision is very good. But the water is at its clearest it's going to be for the rest of the year. You know, April and May are the two most beautiful months for out on the harbor or along the beaches because we're at our driest point of the whole year, so you don't have those tannin waters flowing down out of all of our creeks and canals and rivers to make it brown. You know, so it's got a very, very clear appearance. You know, a buddy of mine was out going by the Alligator Creek Reef, which is, 16, 18 feet of water?
Mm-hmm.
He could see the complete outlines of all of it, including a couple of the reef balls that were down there the other day.
At Alligator Creek,
He could make out the reef balls.
That's awesome.
So
did he see any of the Goliath grouper sitting down
there? No, I don't know if he did. He didn't specify that, but he actually said he could actually identify that they were reef balls because reef balls that they put out are actually like a half circle, you know, so they sit flat on the bottom. You know, so he was able to identify that. So there's some very clear water out there right now. So that fluorocarbon is going to be more beneficial to getting you bites than, say, regular monofilament. But they both will work.
Now, you'll hear from some people, and I have a feeling that people who had a financial interest in fluorocarbon started this. that fluorocarbon is invisible in the water, and that's why you should be using it, that it vanishes underneath the water. And that's just not true. It doesn't disappear.
No. But that's almost as silly as red does.
Yeah. But it does have lowered visibility in the water when you compare it to monofilament. And it's because of a technical thing called refractive index, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, just basically think of it as the way that light moves within a substance, within a material. And the refractive index of
like
fluorocarbon... Yes, like Pink Floyd. The refractive index of fluorocarbon is very similar to the refractive index of water. So when you're looking at fluorocarbon underwater, it still looks like it basically does in the air, a strand of clearish material that you see, but you don't see very well. Monofilament, on the other hand, looks like a strand of shiny metal underwater. So which one do you think the fish is going to notice less when he comes up to your bait to eat it? The strand of shiny metal or the strand of clear plastic?
Have you played with that with your diving skills, RJ?
I have been on diving trips where we've picked up balls and balls of monofilament that have rolled around, like in Lighthouse Hole and places like that. And you can see the difference between the monofilament and the fluorocarbon in that same pile, in that same tumbleweed. So, yes, you spot the monofilament right away, and you can barely see the fluorocarbon.
Okay. I like it. I mean, you ask a diver because they're going to see stuff totally different than how we see it from above water.
And you see it, if you're a diver, you kind of see it the way the fish sees it.
Right.
You know, you get the same, you know, the light's coming at you from a different direction. It's being refracted off of all kinds, I like that word, refraction. It's bouncing off of all kinds of things, and you really do see things differently than you would see it on the surface in the air. So you get an idea of what the fish sees. And when you see monofilament in the water, you see it. It's a line. Now, some fish are not affected by that. Some fish, they don't have that good of vision. But you get fish like tarpon and bluefish and a few others. They've got great vision, and they see those things right away. And if they get put off by it, you get less hits with monofilament, I would think, than you would with fluorocarbon.
Absolutely. And depending on your method for tarpon fishing and where you're tarpon fishing, you know, back in the old days, 100 years ago, when they were tarpon fishing, they used wire leader. But you had to use wire leader because you're fishing with big dead baits and your bycatch was sharks. If you didn't use the wire leader, you were getting cut off all the time. So you can still use wire leader and you can still catch tarpon, but it has to be a method that they're not as likely to see the leader. Like, for example, a dead mullet laying on the bottom. So if you're going to do that, or if you're going to be fishing at night and fishing down near the bottom, it won't matter nearly as much. But if you're doing the methods that most of us are talking about for tarpon fishing, casting crabs, throwing a bait buster or something like that, then yeah, you've got to minimize the visibility of anything that might put the fish off that.
Especially if you're working the beaches. If you're working the beaches at this time of year, visibility is so good for the fish that you really do need to have the best advantage you can possibly have. And spending a few more bucks on fluorocarbon, it could be the difference between a successful day and a skunk day.
Right.
Yeah. No. And by the way, when you're getting that leader material, make sure that you get actual leader material, which has a harder outer coating on it. You know, they do make fluorocarbon and monofilament for filling reels with. I don't know if you can find it in the 60 and 80 pound range, but I know you can find monofilament in those ranges. And if you're getting just the regular spool filling stuff, yeah, it's too soft. It doesn't have the abrasion resistance like the leader material does.
Right. So when you're putting out a live bait, you know, this time of year, the two major baits, I would say, for the harbor and the intercoastal would be crabs. Obviously, are going to be the dominant one all the way around, whether you're in the harbor, the intercoastal, the passes, or the beaches, or offshore. But also, ladyfish have been working exceptionally well lately. I think the bite has slowed down just a tiny bit on ladyfish.
And we don't really have thread fins yet.
Not yet. There's some starting to show up offshore, and then there's been some down in Pine Island Sound, but not a great deal of what we would consider tarpon threadies yet.
Not the density that we're looking for at this point. So now we also still have a lot of shrimp out there.
Yes.
And tarpon absolutely love shrimp.
Why would they eat a shrimp? They're so big.
Yeah. Why would I eat an M&M? I weigh 300 pounds.
Right. You know, and a lot of people don't know that. You know, people get so fixated on crabs, ladyfish, squirrelfish, you know, the standard normal live baits that tarpon usually eat. But, you know, tarpon come here for the food and to reproduce. And one of the major food sources here this time of year is shrimp. And they will absolutely eat a shrimp in a heartbeat. I mean, there's some days where it'll work 10 to 1 over the crab.
Absolutely.
And I've had a couple of those moments out there and have everyone yelling at me, what are you using? And we tell them shrimp, and they just say, no, what are you really using? You're going light on your leader. You're using a different hook. You know, they're trying to figure it out, and it's like, I'm using shrimp.
Right.
And they just don't believe you. And then you have one guy that actually believes you. He comes over, you give him a couple shrimp. Next thing you know, he's putting fish in the air. And it's like, hey, you know,
Look at that
works.
Well, and part of it is that tarpon especially like to eat little things. I mean, tarpon have huge mouths. A tarpon at the full adult size of 150 pounds probably has no problem at all eating a 15-pound jack if it wanted to.
Right.
But that's not what they normally go for. They're attuned into going for smaller baits a lot of the time, and it goes all the way back to their very early childhoods. Tarpon grow up here in our mangrove swamps, in areas where there's very little dissolved oxygen. So it's a great nursery because there are no major big fish predators in there to eat them. And tarpon, of course, can breathe oxygen, so they don't care about low dissolved oxygen levels in the water. It's perfectly fine. But since there's not a lot of oxygen in the water, the main thing for them to eat back there is insect larvae. So you've got tarpon up until the time that they're maybe in the 20-inch range that are focusing on a lot of mosquito larvae.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, if you grow up eating little tiny things like that in large numbers, when you get to be adult size, yeah, a shrimp, I mean, absolutely, that's right in their prey range size.
Yeah,
perfect.
Absolutely. Well, and RJ, you've done fly fishing before. I've done virtually none to speak of.
And I found that shrimp-like imitations work well with tarpon as do a bucktail. And I'm usually surprised at how small of an item they'll pick up. And sometimes they'll ignore some of the bigger stuff.
Yeah, I've seen guys throwing the big purple streamer flies at them and then have to switch over to a little crab or shrimp pattern
right. In
like a clouser minnow and have much, much better success at it.
I was going to say the clouser minnow is probably the thing that works best on tarpon from on shore when you're working the beaches.
Yeah, this is an area of not getting hung up on, you know, it's a big fish, so I need a big bait for it. You know, you can really shoot yourself in the foot doing that.
Absolutely.
And like you mentioned, the crabs are fantastic this time of year, but if you have crabs, you can also go out and catch some permit out on the reefs right now.
Yeah. Yeah, those have been starting to show up pretty good numbers out there. You know, from 3 to basically 15 miles out, there's been an assortment of permit out there, along with a few barracuda, been some Spanish mackerel scattered out there, an occasional king, an occasional cobia, been a few bigger sharks moving around out there. But the bottom fish have been really good. They're like your lane snapper, your mangrove snapper, which seems to get better as you get out farther for the mangrove snapper. And then there's been a few yellowtail snapper out there too. So you've got a lot of cool things going on out there. It's just a matter of finding the permit, though.
Yeah, because all the other stuff sounds like fun and blah, blah, blah. But permit, dude. And this year, the reports that I've had of the big permit being out there have been absolutely fantastic. It seems like this love bug season we're having, with these love bugs all over the place, we're having that kind of a permit season this year.
Do you think there's that many numbers, or is it just better quality? Because that's what I'm hearing
both.
Is better quality than I am numbers.
I'm hearing both, and a lot of that is actually coming from a little bit further north than I consider to be my stomping grounds, which is roughly off the Boca Grande area. A lot of what I'm hearing about has been off Sarasota.
Yeah, I've been hearing Sarasota and Venice pretty well. Like, what is it, M7 off of Venice and M8. You know, those have been two that a guy was talking about the other day because he went out there grouper fishing
yep.
and stopped on a couple of those spots and got into some.
So this might be one of those times when it's a good idea to step outside of your comfort zone a little bit and go explore some new areas and see what you can find up there, because those reports have been phenomenal. And, you know, some of the reports I've had have been schools of dozens to 100 fish, and the average size of those fish being in the 25 to 35 pound range.
That would
and
be fun.
And that is just...
I'd like to do that.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that people travel halfway around the world to go do.
At least, yeah, absolutely. And speaking of getting outside of the box and going out of your comfort zone, once you've gone with your baits and everything, now where are you going to go look for the tarpon at?
Yeah, where are you going to go look? I mean, obviously, Boca Grande Pass has all the tarpon, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the only place where you can catch tarpon. Nowhere else. You know, according to them, anyway.
Well, according to some people.
You know, the tarpon move into those passes in very good numbers. And, yes, it seems like it'd be shooting fish in a barrel, because you can actually shoot them easier than you can catch them there.
Way easier.
You know,
slightly illegal. Please don't shoot the tarpon.
Right. But those fish are moving out along the beaches and in the harbor. And in the harbor, a lot of times those fish are hanging out in what we call the 20-foot holes. There's three primary holes in the harbor. And some people get confused by those 20-foot holes, thinking they're going to go grouper fishing because they're
right.
All hole.
Deep holes.
Yeah, and really all it is a big dent in the bottom of the harbor that happens to be a little deeper. And the best reference point I can give to that being a bit deeper is when the currents are a little bit different, from tides and river flows. But it's also a little cooler. And then as we get into our rainy season, the salinity is higher because fresh water floats on top of salt water. So I think those deeper holes provide just a little bit more of that comfort zone that the tarpon and their food source like to have.
Can we call them dishes? The 20-foot dishes?
There you go.
That's a good way. Yeah, the 20-foot dishes, because that's actually what they look like, is a big dish.
Yeah, big spoon.
Yeah.
So going out to those holes, basically, one of the ways that I personally do it, first of all, I'm going to talk to friends and see if they're in a specific area. But let's say for me, leaving out of my canal by the Port Charlotte Beach complex, and let's say I'm going to go out there and just going blind. And since we're in Northport, we got a lot of Northport listeners here. Let's start at El Jobin, because that's going to be a really good area to start, because you got the Myakka River. I would be going out of my boat, or from my boat, out of the boat launch right there by El Jobin. One, I'm going to turn right and go towards the El Jobin Bridge and start to look there first. Then I'm going to turn and head down the Myakka River and kind of zigzag just a little bit back and forth, looking both directions.
Now, hold on a second. You're going to be looking.
Uh-huh.
You're going to be looking for what?
I'm going to be looking for fish. You're going to look for tarpon actually coming up on the surface, what we call rolling fish. You mentioned it earlier about tarpon breathe air. Well, tarpon not only breathe air, but they also don't have a swim bladder. They have an air bladder. So they actually gulp that air to help buoyant themselves at different depths in the water. So you have a good tell, basically. Big mirror comes up on the surface of the water. Hey, that was probably a tarpon.
Probably. But this can be a really challenging thing if you don't have any point of reference for it. Going out there and trying to spot these rolling fish.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you have a little bit of a chop on the surface, and especially if it started to blow up into some white caps. Because every white cap is a tarpon.
Yes. I know this very well. Yeah, I mean, it does take practice and some time and some aggravation, but you can look for birds. You can look for schools of bait. You can even, they'll even breach and free jump.
Yeah, every now and then, when you get lucky.
A free jumping fish is usually a good sign that it's a feeding fish, so that's always nice. But they're not always in big schools. When those free jumping fish are going on like that, a lot of times it's just a single fish going off.
Yeah. And when I try to get people to understand it and to get the visual in their head of what tarpon rolling look like, this is why I send people to Boca Grande Pass. I tell them, you have to do some background here, okay? You need to be able to identify those rolling fish as they move. You need to understand what it looks like, how fast it happens. You know, what does a rolling fish look like? It's hard to explain, even though it seems like it would be really simple. Go into the Boca Grande Pass area, hang out around the guys who are tarpon fishing. Don't tarpon fish. Don't even bring a rod with you, because you're going to want to tarpon fish in Boca Grande Pass, and it's the one place that you as a beginner should not be tarpon fishing. But get the feel for being around those fish. See what they look like when they come up. And understand that when you go fishing in other places, a lot of times you're going to see single fish roll, not the groups of 50 that come up and roll like you're going to see in the pass. So, you know, but it will help you imprint that image into your head and get it there where it can live, so that when you're out there in the mouth of the Myakka River and you're scanning, looking all around you, trying to figure out, okay, was that a rolling fish? Was that a rolling fish? You need to have a good, strong visual reference.
Right. You know, and there's nothing wrong with fishing Boca Grande Pass. I
strongly disagree with people who are beginners. They should not be fishing Boca Grande Pass. You get into way too much trouble.
Yeah, no. There's way too many ways to get hurt in the pass.
And I agree with that. But it's mainly to go out there, because you got to learn sometime. You know, you either trial by fire or just don't do it at all. But, you know, you've got to go down there and eventually learn how to do it. So you've got two ways. One, you hire a guide that will go with you on your boat to maybe show you what that fish is capable of, you know, how to fish that area and some of the background techniques and rules to it. Or you go down there and sit on the outside of those fishermen, observing everything, and then stay way on the outside of their perimeter of where those fish are at, because every now and then those fish are going to move right where you're at, and you're going to be in the thick of it and get clobbered by a whole bunch of other anglers anyway.
Yep.
And then they're going to quickly move out of there again, so you'll be calmer again. You know, but, you know, there's so many other places where those tarpon and, you know, hang out and are very capable of being fished for, that you don't have to fish Boca Grande Pass. Usually it's one of those things that, for beginners, you suggest drive out there, look at those fish, go, wow, that's beautiful, take all your pictures you want, and then come right back into the harbor or right back out on the beaches and go fish for those fish where there's less pressure, generally happier, easier to catch fish.
And you've got more room and space to fight that fish where you don't have that in the past.
And you're in shallower water where the fish is going to probably be a lot more fun to fight, because your battle is going to be more aerial than it is with Boca Grande Pass fish, which a lot of times will jump once, twice, sometimes not at all, and then take you down to the bottom, and you have to pull those fish back up off the bottom and out of those huge schools of fish, which is work.
It's a lot of work. But it's still fun anyway.
I'm not saying it's not fun, but it's not fun for your first tarpon, for your beginning tarpon that you're going to catch on your own.
Yeah.
And if you want to hunt tarpon, one of the things you can do is look at your charts. And we talked about the 20-foot dishes, and there's plenty of smaller holes around and depressions and drop-offs and things like that. And that's likely where you're going to find tarpon. They're not going to be there all the time. But if you're gonna play the odds and you really don't know, you know, how to identify where the fish are, that's a good way to start, is go find those holes and dishes and depressions around the harbor, and you're likely gonna find fish there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you know, you can anchor up for them on the outside of the bar, on the west wall or the east side, and wait for those singles and doubles to come through, because that's what a lot of the guys are doing with really good success down in Pine Island Sound right now.
And I'm hearing, too, that it's the opposite. Don't look for structure. Look for depression on the charts, because the tarpon will not hang at structure.
No, you'll very rarely find them on a reef. I mean, it's very common for them to be around reefs or on them, but it's not usually a fishable type scenario.
And he ain't a grouper. He doesn't work like a snook does. He's not going to hang out and wait to ambush something. It's not how tarpon feed.
No, they're constantly on the move. You know, they aren't going to just sit there and hide behind one of those rocks and go, okay, this is perfect. You know, so once you get out there and you've got your bait and you're finding some of those rolling fish, there's a lot of people that get a little bit timid about fishing because they don't have a trolling motor for tarpon, which is a huge asset when it comes to fishing for tarpon, because you can move around much more stealthy and you're not going to spook some of those schooling fish, plus there's usually other anglers in the area. But what do you do if you don't have a trolling motor and you just have an outboard?
You row.
You row. What are we, Vikings? Nice. You know, one of the things that I always tell customers is figure out which way the wind and the tide is going, shut down your boat, and figure out where you're going to drift. Figure out the angle that you're going to drift. And let's say you see some fish and you see several anglers out there fishing those fish with their trolling motors down or whatever. You circle way out and around like at least an eighth of a mile. Shut down. Get your baits casted out or be standing on the bow ready to cast. And start your drift towards those fish and those group of anglers. And as you come close to them, just let them know that you don't have a trolling motor and you don't want to spook the fish that you're just drifting through. 9 out of 10 of them are going to be fine with that because you didn't screw up their fish and they'll move out of your way to allow you to go through. There's always going to be that one jerk in there that you cannot fix. That's just his normal, he's just a miserable guy his whole life, so you can't fix him.
His wife probably beats him.
Or boyfriend, whatever. You know, he's just, either way, he's just miserable no matter what. You know, so ignore him. Once you get past those groups of fish, you still, once again, want to keep drifting for at least another eighth, even a quarter of a mile past those anglers. Start your motor up, circle way out and around them, and start the process over again.
Now, when you're doing this, make sure that you have a pretty good appetite for frustration, because a lot of times those fish will decide to change direction as they're going, and the drift that you very carefully calculated to intercept them is now completely wrong, and they're close enough that you can't fire up your motor without spooking them.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about that, unfortunately. You know, but, you know, you do your best, and what you can do is what you can do, but,
and
you know,
it's part
you
of
don't...
the fun of fishing for tarpon.
Yeah. It is. It's one of the most frustrating and most exhilarating fish there is to catch. There's no question about it.
Without a doubt.
And even with the trolling motor, it's not like you can normally just go right through the middle of that school without spooking them.
No.
You know, trolling motors make noise, too, and those tarpon are very attuned to what that sound means. So even with the trolling motor, you still want to be stealthy and stay a little bit further back.
Absolutely. You know, and that's what the purpose of the long rods are for, is for those casting or putting one in the rod holder and having it out, you know, 50 to 100 feet out behind the boat as you're drifting through that area to catch some of those stragglers as you're going by.
Now, we touched a little bit earlier on fighting the fish and how you need to limit that fight time. What are some good techniques to have in your fighting belt to do that?
Well, you let the rod and the reel do as much of the work as possible. Obviously, your back, arms, and buttocks are going to get a little strained to them too as you're pulling on the fish. But one of the biggest mistakes people make is when the fish is running to the left, they pull back really hard, either straight up towards them, or they pull to the right, but they don't turn the rod and the reel facing the line. You know, your rod and reel should always be facing the direction the line is going. So if your fish is running to the left, you should be rotating that reel and rod in your wrist so it is pointing towards that line at all times. So that way the backbone of that rod is being maximized to its best ability to put that pressure on that fish, just help slow them down. You know, it's kind of like we can bend over and touch our toes or our kneecaps in some situations. No problem. But if we try to lean to our side, we can only go so far. And a rod is the exact same way. It has a backbone on it. So it being turned and rotated towards the line that fish is going to, you're maximizing that pressure of that rather than having it pull to the sideways mark.
Yeah, and you always have to keep pressure on these
always
fish.
Opposite pressure.
Do not let them rest during the fight. You do not rest during the fight. You are constantly fighting this fish the whole time, the whole way through.
Yeah.
A really good trick that someone taught me a few years back was that when that fish comes up to roll, try to avoid letting him roll. Try to disrupt what he wants to do, because if he can grab a bubble of air, that's oxygen. That's going to help fuel his fight for that much longer. Try to deny that fish the ability to do it. If you see him coming up for that bubble of air, reel it down tight and put as much pressure on that fish as you can to pull him away from being able to roll and come up and take that bubble.
Right. You know, and make sure you resuscitate the fish once you've landed them and everything else, because these fish will fight themselves to the death. You know, they have the one of the largest lactic acid dumps there is when it comes to fighting for their lives, essentially. So when you get them boat side, you've got to take the time to resuscitate them, whether it's 5 minutes or 25 minutes. Take that time to resuscitate them. And I know we didn't cover everything because you really can't do it with tarpon.
Dude, I told you, we didn't even get a quarter of the way through what we could have talked about. We could sit here for the rest of the afternoon and discuss tarpon and still miss things.
Exactly. You know, so, you know, if you want to discuss tarpon more and learn more about them as far as fishing for them goes, you can always stop in the shop at Fish and Frank's and ask me or any one of the other guys, and we'll all walk you through it. Josh is there here on Saturday evenings. He's very, very good at this stuff.
And we have a lot of information in Waterline Magazine that you can read, so if you're not getting Waterline, which you should be, go to boatingandfishing.com and you can pick it up there.
There you go. And you folks have yourselves a great day, and thank you as usual, RJ.
See you next week.
I said fish, 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 fish. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.